listening to The Cooler Ring, a podcast made for manufacturing marketers. Here are Carmen Perry and Jeff White.
Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing well. Delighted to be here. And you?
I'm doing great. You know, I flubbed that first time we recorded the intro, which doesn't happen very often, but you know.
You can only refer to that if you're going to leave the flub in the final edit.
Yeah, we'll let Rich edit something into that, you know, for promotional purposes.
You're listening to The Cooler Ring.
Exactly. But I'm beyond the flub, which that made me very excited. I'm really excited for today's guest and conversation because it really, you know, it's easy, I think, for those of us in marketing to think that, you know, to look at the more advanced side of the profession, if you will, or the more advanced side of some of the tactics and kind of options that are available today. But there's an awful lot of manufacturers out there that are, you know, really building a foundational level of marketing capability to fuel their operation in today's day and age. And that's not like a bad place to be. It's often representative of a business that was very good at generating lead flow in other ways previously, and they're just kind of, you know, a pivoting to improve and modernize. And I think it's a worthwhile topic, and it's nice to kind of peel back and kind of hear the experience of a marketer that's kind of living through that.
Yeah, and learning how to operationalize that, you know, that sales process with a sales team too.
Very
interesting. So joining us today is Matt Lukens. Matt is the marketing director at Flex Interconnect Technologies. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Matt.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Matt, I want to start by having you introduce Flex Interconnect Technologies to our guests. You know, tell us a little bit about the company and what you all do there.
Sure. So Flex Interconnect Technologies has been around for a little over 25 years out of Milpitas, California, right by San Jose in Silicon Valley, primarily as a fabricator of flexible and rigid flexible circuits. So custom circuitry, that's kind of where we play. Today, we're getting into more assembly services as a part of that and, you know, scaling up from being more of a historically kind of quick turn, low volume, and now we're able to handle larger volumes as well. So, you know, we've been serving a lot of the innovative companies out in the Silicon Valley area for 25 years, and at this stage, kind of growing beyond that, growing to all of North America and beyond in some ways and with some clients, kind of on the focusing on the new product introduction side of things.
And that's really cool. And I mean, it's interesting, as you imagine, you know, expanding your market and the customers that you serve from people that you could probably drive to and visit most generally, you know, in the early days of the company, et cetera, to, you know, now having to pivot to engineer for a very different lead flow.
In some ways it's organic too, and you know, I think it's one of the surprises when I came to the company last year was, you know, what's our definition of success? What do we need here? You know, where are we today? And company, as I said, it's been around for over 25 years, and it's been cash positive every year. There's no outside investors that we're beholden to or anything like that. So it's a very, I think for me, it's a unique place because I haven't been at a company like that before. I've been at other manufacturing companies that are much larger or public or VC backed. And this is a little bit of a pivot because it's kind of like, okay, you're not just doing this one thing anymore. You got to roll up your sleeves and do a little bit of everything.
And give us a bit of that background and texture, if you would. What, what were your previous roles? Because you said, I think, 7 months that you've been with Flex Interconnect?
Yep, about 7 or 8 months. So prior to that, I worked for Proto Labs, on-demand manufacturing for injection molding and CNC machining. And that was really the other end of the spectrum. That was a very large public company. And, you know, I was overseeing all the digital marketing at that time, which included a multi-million dollar global budget on ad spend. And so that's kind of one end of the spectrum. I've also worked for an on-demand machining company out of the Bay Area, and later we had moved to Atlanta, and then also for a rigid circuit board assembly company out of the Bay Area as well. So kind of ran the gamut there. I guess started backwards, I guess, in one way, like the big company first and then whittling it down to smaller and smaller organizations.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I think you can learn so much so quickly in one of those big organizations, but it doesn't necessarily, it's interesting to extend that kind of know-how into smaller organizations.
Well, and I've had fantastic mentors along the way that have helped me learn more about how to run a business. And I think a lot of times for marketers, you lose track of how to run a business. And when you're a very specialized marketer in a very big machine, you can lose sight of all the different elements that are impacting your balance sheet at the end of the quarter. So I've been very fortunate to be a part of those balance sheet reviews and helping plan those quarterly reports in, somewhat smaller organizations. It's helped me to gain a better understanding of what it takes to run a successful business beyond just, the fire hose of leads that we blast over the fence to the sales team. So, I kind of like where I am now because I can play in many different sandboxes.
Yeah.
Man, I'd love to do a show another time just about the idea of how much business do marketers and others in this field need to understand in order to truly have the impact that they should, because we certainly...
It varies.
There's varying levels.
Yeah. That's right.
It's fair to say.
Yeah. And some companies want that very insulated, right? And others are happy to kind of open the books up and let the marketers dive in and think a little bit more critically about their role.
So you're coming into this new firm, you're 8 months in. It's a bit of a different beast than you've worked with before. I guess you started to give us a bit of that texture about what you found when you were there, and so I guess let's kind of go deeper into that. What was the state of affairs when you arrived, and what do you see as being the, or what have you seen as being the key early foundational elements that you've needed to put in place?
Yeah, so, the CEO, it's a small network. Everybody kind of knows everybody in electronics manufacturing. So the CEO had reached out to me last summer and reached out to some other folks that know me and kind of, we had a very lengthy interview recruitment process, which was great because he shared all the business stuff, right? Then, and we could have open conversations. And where the company had grown successfully for 20 some years up till COVID and then kind of plateaued a little bit. And so the challenge going in was, how do we get out of that, right? And it's been great to have open conversations with company leadership about how they've had wonderful success that brought them to this point, but getting beyond this point might have to look different in some ways. As we talked through that and we talked about company goals, one of the things that kept coming up was, well, we need new companies, we need new accounts, we need new businesses to work with. And after I got kind of under the hood in our CRM a little bit, I started questioning, well, do you really? Like, is the goal new companies or is the goal a certain revenue number for the next year, right? Just for the next year, not forever, but for the next year. And as we talked about it, and I kind of put the screws to leadership a little bit and just said, like, if I got you this revenue number without new companies, would you be happy? And they were like, well, yeah, that is more important. Yeah, we want that. So that's where we kind of looked at our database we had, and we had really good contacts and really good accounts in our database and lots of companies that had worked with us in the past, but maybe not the past 18 months. And so for this first year, our strategy going in was really like, hey, before we open the checkbook, let's really make sure we're doing all the right things with all the assets we already have and really leveraging that. And then we can build upon that down the road once we're sure and confident that we're, you know, putting our best foot forward with some of the basics.
Matt, did you dive into this with them before you joined? Like, did you have a sense that there was maybe a bit of gold in the CRM before you joined, or was this something that you discovered in your initial review of what you had on hand?
I think before I joined, you know, I was very upfront that my opinions might be different from theirs, right? Like, in a constructive, respectful way. Like, I understand you think we need to do X, but I'm pretty sure we can do Y instead. And we talked about that a little bit, but I didn't dive into, I didn't have full access to the CRM before I joined, but I did have a lot of questions for them about their CRM, how many contacts they had, how many accounts, how the regions were split up, what data they were keeping track of, things like that. And in those conversations, certain things kind of came to light where, you know, oh, we hadn't tracked that in the past. But yes, we see your point. That would be a good thing for us to track. And so that's part of that foundational work this year has been like, what are those things we need to identify and track in our CRM to better operationalize our sales team? And not just our sales team, but all the way back to our quoting team and our order management team. What kind of data points can we keep track of that maybe in the past with fewer sales reps, they just know it. There's just a lot of that deep knowledge of their accounts and they just know it, but that doesn't scale very well. So a lot of the conversations were around having to get those basic pieces right in order to scale, and acknowledging that if over the next several years we do double our bookings, we don't have the infrastructure to support that. So kind of figuring out what steps along the way would indicate upgrades to that infrastructure.
Not a lot of CEOs would mind hearing the advice. Let's not spend some money right now because we may have a very valuable asset that we're underutilizing today. And that's pretty easy to find some receptive ears to that. Also, you know, it's a rare message to hear. It's even more rare maybe to hear that there's 30,000 contacts that haven't been spammed with a terrible newsletter for the last 5 years or something to the point where they all marked it as spam.
Right.
So is it that they actually hadn't been abusing these contacts at all? They were just collecting the data?
That's right. There hadn't really been any kind of marketing emails to them. It was very transactional emails.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I lucked out with that. But there was a little bit of a bias to overcome, I think, because there was like, well, you can send an email, but nobody's going to reply. And so there was just overcoming those kinds of objections. We're like, I know no one's going to reply to the first one, but by the third one, they will. And with the number of people you have, you know, this is what you need. But maybe taking a step back from some of those tactical things, where we really started was agreeing on what our bookings goal for the year was going to be. And just doing that work based on what 2023 was, what 2022 was, you know, going back, I think we went back to 2019 a little bit and looked at bookings by week to try to understand what's a realistic goal for this year. Then once we had that, we really had to build out what that marketing model would look like in terms of, if we want to hit this number for bookings, what's our conversion rate from an RFQ to a PO? So how many RFQs do we need to hit that? And what's our average transaction rate going to be? And from there, we even backed it out a little bit further and said, okay, if we need this many quotes per week to hit, or this many RFQs to hit our goals, what kinds of sales activities do we need to be doing in front of that to hit those RFQ numbers? And, you know, again, as a small company, that's just not something where they ever had that model before. And the early conversations around that got very anecdotal about, well, last year we had this customer place this big order in this month, and the year before it was a different month with a different customer. And so we had to kind of agree, like, doesn't matter, just flatten it, you know, just start somewhere, make some assumptions. And then setting up kind of that cadence of meeting with the sales team and saying, this is your goal for the week. This is what, you know, we have to achieve this week as a team to hit our ultimate bookings numbers for the year. That was just something where they hadn't had that before, because they had very good salespeople that would just go work and bring in bookings, and they were growing, and you know, they didn't need it. But by doing that, we started getting really good feedback from the sales team too. Like, I need this in order to hit my quote number for the week, or I'd like to see more of this. I need more content I can share on social media. That kind of like bottoms up approach, it made it easier for me, because now I have the sales team buying into what we're doing on the marketing side.
Yeah, I really like that.
Pretty interesting approach. I mean, you're almost like Peter Brand coming into the Oakland A's. A bit of a money ball sort of
kind of, yeah, yeah.
Figuring out how much you need in order to hit it, and then how you're going to play it. I think one of the interesting things that you mentioned is you hadn't been contacting these folks other than transactional emails. I mean, that also presents new challenges, because they haven't necessarily heard of you. So you have to, or they don't remember that they had an interaction with you, because it may have been several years back. How did you approach that in a way that would keep any sort of spam seeming activity to a minimum, while also kind of increasing the likelihood that they might engage?
Well, I was fortunate to join in the back half of last year, because I think there was some seasonality we could play off of in some of our messaging. You know, a lot of OEMs have certain product development budgets they have to use up by the end of the year. So there was that kind of messaging we could include in those emails. The other thing we did was, instead of just mass sending on the marketing side, you know, we had, we got, I think, 2,500 accounts roughly in our database. So let's say a third of them are assigned to our sales team. We just decided kind of early, like, marketing's not going to touch those. We're not going to touch those. And what we did instead was, within our CRM, kind of built the email templates that the sales team can then send out one-on-one to their contacts, where there's already a little bit of relationship or context between the sales rep who's been with our company for a while and the customer there. So that was a great way to kind of get an incremental boost of interest in RFQs. It was just empowering the sales team to do some of that outreach work. And then on the marketing side, the blasts were just like laying down cover fire, right? Like, those are the less active accounts. Those are all the accounts that maybe haven't quoted anything in 18 months or more. So we'll just provide some coverage there. And if anybody, you know, raises their hand and wants some help, we'll get a sales rep involved at that point.
I appreciate the Moneyball reference that Jeff brought in there. And I can see the, the conversion rate math at play. Of course, it would seem to me that I can make some arguments as to why that math is likely to actually be different in reality for net new contacts versus existing. And I could probably argue that in either direction, because I'm contrary that way. I guess, how have you found that to be working so far? Has the conversion rate math held up? Did you overestimate the success?
No.
Did you underestimate the success? What's the skinny?
So we estimated our conversion rates around 50%. They're a little bit lower than that. But our average transaction has turned out to be a lot higher than we estimated historically, which has been good.
That's nice.
Our overall quoting volume is a little bit higher than where we thought we wanted to be. So that's been great. But again, then you look at the conversion and that's lower. So, it kind of didn't shake out everywhere. But yeah, I'm going to, you kind of started a good segue here. One of the things we found was that we are not doing anywhere near as good as we anticipated closing new business this year. So there's been this pushback from some of the stakeholders, like, yes, we're doing great financially, but we're not getting new accounts. And so by putting some of that foundational work into our CRM, we can now track, like, well, let's look at the new accounts. Let's look at every quote that came in from a new account. Now that we're tracking closed loss reasons, let's dive into that and understand, where is there a disconnect here? And I think a lot of what has happened has been that for so long, and this is like in manufacturing, it's very easy to start competing as a commodity and competing on price. And that's not where we want to be. That's not what makes us great. What makes us great is that our yields are going to be 98 to 100%, right? So there's been those opportunities for us to look at some of these instances and say, like, yes, we lost this new account, but they're getting everything from overseas today and waiting 6 weeks. Like, we have no business competing for that business. We don't want it. That's not good for us in the first place. In other instances where we can look and say, well, we lost this one because of pricing and maybe we should have won that, or we lost this one because of lead time, but maybe we should have won that. That's really opened the door for us to have conversations all the way through the organization with the operations team, with the quoting team, and try to figure out, you know, how do we do better? How do we get a better capture rate on these new customers coming in? So, you know, back to the CRM for accounts, we've added fields to say, what are the quoting preferences for this account? And then we're passing that data through to our quoting software and our order management software, just so that we have that visibility throughout the organization that's not tied into one salesperson anymore. We have a place for it where we can say, you know, this company, quick turn to them means 5 days, not 4 weeks. Or this company's a defense company, quick turn to them does mean 5 weeks. By keeping track of that, we're able to do a better job presenting customers with compelling quotes and then closing the business on it.
Yeah, you can communicate your value better because you know what they value.
That's right, yeah.
I guess, do you feel that you're rounding the corner and getting a foundation kind of built that you can now start to scale lead flow and push more through, or where are we at in this evolution in your estimation?
Yeah, and so I want to be clear, we did spend some money and we wasted some, and that's okay. You know, we learned from it. I think our plan had been try some things, figure some stuff out in the first half of the year. There's the summertime period where, you know, in manufacturing things get a little bit slow, some of that activity from customers gets a little slow. And the plan is still that, you know, come this fall, we'll pick up more of some of that paid engagement opportunities. There's, you know, whether it's trade shows, it might be some paid search, although that is really not what it used to be. LinkedIn, we're having a lot of good success on LinkedIn. So there are some things that we're going to, you know, layer in on top as we get into Q3 and Q4 for sure.
That's interesting. How has the... I mean, you've brought a lot of change, seems to me, pretty fast to a sales organization here, and you've done it from the marketing side of the house. And, you know, our listeners can't see you on camera, but I can, and you don't appear to have a lot of bruises. how is that? Has it been a big culture shift there? Can you talk through that change management side of it a bit?
Has it been, I have a champion in the guy that hired me. You know what I mean? Like, he knows there's an acknowledgement we have to try some different things. And there's definitely been some points along the way where maybe it's a little bit uncomfortable to present to the sales team like, hey, this was our goal for RFQs last week and we missed it by 90%, right? Like, what's going on? There is some of that happens and it's uncomfortable. But I think because I've tried to be transparent with the sales team, even as we go through all this strategy work and foundational work, why we're doing it, you know, what the purpose is. And I think people are coming around and agreeing. And I don't mean like agreeing, like they're going to buy into whatever I sell them. Like, no, it's like, this is what's good for the business here. So one example that we've talked about recently is that, you know, we do really well with quick turns. And we've been sending some quotes out where our fastest lead time does not represent that we do quick turns. So it's those kinds of things where when we just bring everybody together and say, hey, we've all agreed we want to do quick turns. We can fulfill those and we can sell on those. So if this is the best lead time we can do, that's not going to be acceptable because that doesn't align with that core value that we're trying to establish there. So I don't know. I think I've been bruised in other companies enough that I try to do a good job of building those expectations early and aligning on them early, just to make sure that, you know, there are going to be road bumps along the way. And we want to make sure that those are as smooth sailing as possible as we get to those.
Well, Matt, it seems to me in listening to you articulate your work here, that you don't come across to me as someone who thinks that it's their way or the highway, and is just you're right, everybody else is wrong, and now you just should do it my way.
I'm wrong all the time.
That attitude just does not seem to be coming out of you at all. I have to think that you've got to give yourself a little bit of credit on how to manage that. It's just been your approach, really.
Okay. but I think you have to be like, we're in marketing. We have to be willing to be wrong. We're wrong all the time. Like, we're fools to think we're not. Like, you know, we regularly,
we're wrong to think we're not wrong.
That's right. Yeah. But whether it's like putting together a really stupid email message or campaign that just falls flat, or, you know, and you have to be open about it. So we have tried some paid search, and I've showed everyone, hey, this isn't working, and this is why, and I was wrong, and this is what we spent, and this is why we're not doing it anymore. So I think as marketers, we have to be willing to, not necessarily celebrate our losses, but use them to build our own credibility and learn from it, not just personally, but like, let the whole group learn from this and move on together.
I love the notion of let your losses help you build your credibility.
You have to set the expectations in order for that to work.
Well, it's so counterintuitive to most marketers to hear that, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's some marketers out there that never have losses or mistakes, but for the other 99% of us, like, it's going to happen.
Well, Matt, what are you, where are you going next? You know, you've been there for almost a year now, and it sounds like that foundation is getting in place.
You're not trying to push them off to another company, are you?
No. But what's the next thing for,
So there's kind of two things we're working on right now that I'm really excited about. Number one is we're building out the sales team, because we have identified that that's where we have a limiting factor, right? We have a constraint around just looking at the number of great accounts we have that have worked with us over the last few years. We need more salespeople. So I've been heavily involved with kind of recruiting both inside sales and business development roles for us that can help support us, hoping to get them in place over the next month or so, so that when we, you know, hit the fall Q3, Q4 timeframe, we're like hitting the ground running with them. The other thing that I'm really excited about that we're working on that's a little bit nerdier, I guess, is really transitioning our messaging from more commodity-based to more value-based. And we kind of alluded to this a few minutes ago, but, you know, we've had a PowerPoint as an organization. We've had the sales presentation for a long time that does a great job talking about all of our capabilities, but the sales team doesn't want to use it. And when we ask them why, it's like, well, this just is going to lead to conversations on price because everybody does these things. So now we're really working on, okay, how do we pivot beyond that? How do we have those value conversations for more value-based selling so that we can, you know, justify the premium that we're charging in some cases here. And it's not that we're super high price. It's just, we know our yields are going to be 98 to 100%. So if we have customers that are used to getting very low prices on yields of 80%, well, then we have to talk about that quality piece more. We can't just talk about hitting their deadline and hitting their price point. We have to introduce where we talk about, you know, our exceptional quality or our applications engineering that we offer or things like that.
Sounds like an excellent differentiation strategy.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that this notion of having a capabilities basic brochure or piece of sales collateral that they don't want to use, because knowing that all the capabilities are like what other people do drives the conversation to price.
That's right. Yeah. That's where it ends up going. And I think it works sometimes, right? Like if somebody needs something really fast and they just want to validate we can make it. And, you know, if it's quantity 5, there's only so much you're going to charge anyway. So they don't really care, right? The delta there between a low cost and a high cost isn't going to make or break them. So that's fine. But when we're thinking about more strategic partnership kinds of things, we have to work on the value conversation a little bit more.
Interesting.
Been having very similar conversations with a construction company I work with sometimes on, everybody builds walls. Everybody delivers trusses. You have to be different here. Don't let your sales pitches go into those conversations about the quality of your walls, because so what? That's the table stakes. So it's really like, you can offer risk reduction. You can get it done more quickly to be on time and on budget and things like that. And that's where with Flex Interconnect Technologies, we need to operationalize our value proposition through our sales team a little bit better, and through all of our teams.
I look forward to watching this unfold. If I were a betting person, my money would be on Flex Interconnect.
Well, now you're putting pressure on me, so thanks.
That wasn't the intent, but we are impressed.
And we will be watching, so okay. Yeah, there's some pressure.
You know? Great.
Matt, it's been great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing this experience with us. It's been awesome.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Cooler Ring with Carmen Perry and Jeff White. Don't miss a single manufacturing marketing insight. Subscribe now at kulapartners.com/thecoolerring. That's KULA partners.com/thecoolerring.